This podcast is brought to you by Podcast Nation.
When bloggers or influencers post their outfit links, 9 times out of 10, I click on it and immediately exit because the price is bananas. It wasn't until recently that I clicked on something expecting it to be the usual out of my price range sweater, and it was under $60 at Quince. Quince has become my ultimate destination for luxury essentials that won't break the bank. Let me tell you about some of the gems I found at Quince. From their 100% Mongolian cashmere sweaters starting at just $50 to their washable silk tops and dresses, organic cotton sweaters, and stunning 14 karat gold jewelry, Quince offers a range of high quality items at prices that are truly within reach. And here's the best part. All Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Give yourself the luxury you deserve with Quince. Go to quince.com/shrinkchicks for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/shrinkchicks to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/shrinkchicks.
Welcome to Shrink Chicks.
I'm Emily Beerley.
And I'm Jennifer Chaikin.
And we're licensed marriage and family therapists and owners of the Therapy Group.
We're on a mission to make therapy and therapeutic topics more relatable and accessible.
So stay tuned, because in order to grow yourself, you gotta know yourself. Hey!
Hey!
Welcome to Shrink Chicks.
Welcome to Shrink Chicks. we've been doing such a better job looking at the camera when we talk.
Because we're on YouTube now, guys. So if you're listening and for some reason, not entirely sure why, you would like to see our faces while we talk about this, you can apparently look at us on YouTube, where Jen and I try very hard to look at the camera, but we're very bad at it.
Really bad at it. Also, last time we were like, okay, let's get started. I feel like a news anchor.
Because we're like having the papers here. Oh my God. What a cool job that must be. I'll hold my paper like this.
Do you think you would be good at that?
You know, what's funny is I went to Penn State, right? And you know, Penn State has the largest meteorologist program, and like half of the meteorologists on the Weather Channel are from Penn State.
No way.
Did you know that?
I had no clue.
Me either. I have no idea what this has to do with any of this subject, besides that's one random fact that I know.
Also, I feel like anyone could be a meteorologist. You know, you could just be like, it might rain, and then it doesn't rain. You're like, just kidding.
I would bet that meteorologists would not feel that way.
I know. I apologize to any
that's
meteorologist
like when your husband,
out there.
Wait, that's oh, like, oh, oh. Right, let's talk about your husband for a second. Wait a second. If you want to talk about somebody who oversimplifies a career, your husband tells us every day how he basically is a therapist.
He's always like, I have no formal training and I could be a therapist. I'm like, okay, honey.
Sure. Like he said every time we talk to him. And I will say this, Bill always does calm me down. When I got COVID, he
Do
was my voice
tell
of
him
reason.
That
We're not. He's never listened
say,
to this, so he'll
I
never hear
yet.
It.
Perfect.
He's never listened to an episode, so he'll have no idea if I'm giving
perfect,
him this compliment.
Because he's going
to
be like, I have no formal training. And be like, oh, fuck.
So we're back for part two of Q&A, because there was just so many that came in last time.
We have so many questions.
And we know a lot of people have a lot of stuff going on. So we are going to do a part two of this, and that's it.
And that's it. Let's start it up.
Okay.
So last time we talked a lot about life transitions, and I think that this time one of the biggest topics we got was around relationships and boundaries. And you know, we love talking about boundaries. If you've listened to our episodes in the past, we apologize if we're just reiterating that over and over again. But I think that if we dive into some relationship and boundary stuff, it'll be helpful for people.
Okay. I'm just going to throw it out there.
Do it.
I don't really get along with my brother, but my mom acts like we do and guilt trips us into hanging out. What do you want to say about that one?
I guess my first thing that comes to my mind is, how do you communicate about that with your mom? I wonder what's going on with your mom that she feels this like real pressure or need to keep you guys together in some way. Guilt trips are funny. I don't know if funny is the right word.
Yeah.
But like for me specifically, guilt trips run in my family.
It's like part of the culture.
Exactly. I love to call out a guilt trip. I love to say, it sounds like you're trying to guilt trip me. If someone guilt trips me, I go the complete opposite direction. Mm-hmm. But you can say guilt trips are almost a form of manipulation.
Yeah.
And, you know, sometimes it's just the way in which we've learned to communicate or say like, hey, listen, it's actually really important to me that you and your brother are close. And so that's, this is what's coming up for me. It sounds like mom has difficulty expressing that. But I do think even the fact that you're saying, hey, I don't get along with my brother, like this isn't a great relationship. Mm-hmm. The fact that you're acknowledging that for yourself means that you're thinking about putting your own needs before your mom's needs of wanting you guys together.
I have something I'm going to say. This leads back to the Kardashians, and I realize that this is a weird tie-in, so stay with me here, okay? Which is, I noticed this really interesting shift of how people relate to their siblings when we look at other siblings we see out in the world. So when we see, like, right, so people, a lot of people, millennials, you know, started experiencing the Kardashians around 2005. And we're talking about people that are like obsessed with their siblings and obsessed with their family and blood is thicker than water and like all this stuff, right? Which I still don't fully understand what that saying means. But I think that there's a feeling of like, we are better if we're close.
Right.
Our family is better and safer if we are close. That's not necessarily true for everyone. Some people have chosen family and they're simply not close with their siblings. I was at, I don't know if I told this story. Did I tell the story in the last episode, actually?
I'm not sure. Tell me.
About someone being like, I hate my siblings. Like,
no, I don't think
I was, somebody had written in, actually, this is funny, and said, like, can you guys do an episode about having, like, one and done, like, kids? And this is very funny because obviously a lot of people say, like, Emily, you're going to have more kids. And I really don't know the answer to that at this point in my life. But it was funny because one of the things everyone says when they say you're going to have more kids, it's always because don't you want them to have a sibling?
Oh, and we talked about this in private.
Like, we talked about this in private. Yeah, okay. Yeah. So I was at a wedding.
It's hard to tell because we talk to each other all the time.
I was at a wedding this summer. It was a wedding that Millie was a flower girl in. Yeah. So we had her there. We're like talking to people. She went home to the hotel. I'm like staying at this wedding. The wedding I was fat shamed at. For any listeners who heard that.
What a fun wedding.
Yes, it was a really great time. But one of the things, me and this guy are talking at the bar, and he's like, oh, your daughter's so cute, she's only one, whatever. And he said, oh, I have a daughter too. And I said, oh, well then, you know, what question everybody asks? And he says, yes, am I going to have more? And the answer is no. I fucking hate my brother. I would rather have been an only child, and I'm going to keep my daughter an only child. It works for our family. And so I think when we do this thing about like, don't you want them to have this? Don't you want them to have that? And that's great if it works out. But sometimes two siblings are just very different personalities and they're not that close. I think sometimes they are.
I think it's easy to idealize situations, right? Like, oh, if they have a sibling, then they're definitely going to be close, right? So like, did mom have a picture of the two of you? Like when she had kids, she was like, oh, we need them to have a sibling because the two of them are going to be so close. And is it, you know, conflicting with her expectations about what the future looked like for her children, mm-hmm. right? And I think that that happens so often. You're right. Like, people don't have a good relationship with their siblings all the time, and you can't control that.
Yeah.
Right? And so I think it's okay to acknowledge that, like, that's not where your relationship is. And I think, too, the thing that you said, Em, about a chosen family is really important and something to highlight because as we see other families where they're close and they have this connection, we're like, oh, I want that. And so we try to almost fit a square peg into a round hole and say, oh, well, how do I create that? How do I hold on to this relationship? But when you really look at the relationship, you can say, okay, that's actually not working for me.
So tangible advice for this person. I would want to call it out to mom, I know you love me hanging out the family and I'd love to make that happen sometimes, but it maybe is not going to happen all the time. Right?
Or ever.
But when you say this to me, it feels a bit like a guilt trip. So I'm wondering if you're trying to communicate something else to me, right? There's a function behind guilt trips. It's a function of maybe fear. If you guys aren't close, what happens to our family? Fear. If you guys aren't close, does that mean I failed as a mother, right? Like, there's like a function behind stuff that I would want to be interested in knowing what's underneath. But you can set a boundary and not do any of that.
And that's why we're talking about boundaries
today. Yep. Okay. What would healthy boundaries look like for a child parent who is a bully but you still love?
Hold on. What would healthy boundaries look like for a child parent? Child whose
parent. Thank you. Wait, what is it? Know what you say?
Child whose parent is a bully. I was like, what's a child parent?
I didn't know what that meant. Okay.
All right, we got it. Thank you.
Say it again.
What would healthy boundaries look like for a child who has a parent that's a bully?
But you still love. Well, I mean, of course you love them. It's your parent, right? Like, that's like a biological connection and attachment. But you also do not have to take bullying or criticism because it's your parent, right? So, like, let's have a conversation about overly critical parents.
Let's have a whole episode on overly critical parents.
And what that does to you, right? If you have a parent who that is, like, literally, I think there's people that act like that's part of connection, right? Like, oh, that's what we do in my family. We rag on each other. Yeah, we criticize. We make jokes, right? But, like, there's no jokes if there's not safety. That's not a thing.
I also think, you know, when you have a parent that's been critical of you your whole life, it starts, and like when you're a child and you're trying to understand who you are and who you are in connection to the world, mm-hmm. and your relationship with your parent is the model of that. And when your parent is consistently saying something critical to you or is a bully to you, start to internalize that. Mm-hmm. And so I think something to ask yourself is like, what is that like for me when my parent is bullying or saying something critical to me? How have I handled it in the past? Almost like kind of keep tabs on it.
Mm-hmm. Have I ignored it? Right. So look at yourself, like do a little assessment. In the past, have I ignored it and avoided it? Have I laughed it off and made a joke about it? Have I criticized them back? Right. So like use that as your spectrum of gauge.
Right. And how has that worked for you? Mm-hmm. Right. Ignoring it, is it still happening? Criticizing them back, does it just give them more ammunition for that to be part of our communication? So just to think about in a kind of systemic nature, because we love thinking about things in a systemic way, how has my reaction to it maybe kind of cycled into like what our communication looks like now? Because as we talk about like the definition of, is it a definition of... What's that saying? The definition of crazy is like doing the same thing.
Of insanity is doing insanity, the same thing.
Insanity, right, right. Could not get the word. Yeah. So to think about, okay, well, what can I do differently? How can I respond differently to this? How the ways in which I was responding, how is that working? How is that not working for me? And what can I do differently? What do these boundaries look like? So let's talk about what those boundaries can look like.
Okay, so healthy boundaries. I would say one of the healthiest boundaries you can make is, you can't speak to me like that. I won't allow you to speak to me that way.
If you listen to one of our latest episodes titled Em and Jen Fall Apart, you know the current feelings of burnout that we're both facing. Running our business, the therapy group, keeping up with the podcast, and enduring a house renovation leaves little time for grocery shopping, meal prepping, and cooking. So we are extremely thankful for our sponsor, Hungry Root. When I received my first delivery of the Hungry Root box, it felt like a breath of fresh air. Hungry Root saves me so much time and offers customizable options. Plus, with perfectly portioned ingredients, I'm wasting far less food than I would if I were left to my own devices in the kitchen. No more throwing away wilted veggies or expired condiments lurking in the back of my fridge. Each order is fully customizable, so you can take their suggestions or choose anything you want. They've got fresh produce, high quality meat and seafood, smoothies, sweets, ready to eat meals, kids snacks and meals, vitamins and supplements, and much more. I discovered Three Little Pigs, spinach, feta, and egg bites in my last delivery, and they are my new obsession. Also, Hungry Root's coconut curry sauce is not to be missed. Everything from Hungry Root follows a simple standard. It's got to taste good, be quick to make, and contain whole trusted ingredients. Right now, Hungry Root is offering Shrink Chicks listeners 40% off your first delivery and free veggies for life. Just go to hungryroot.com/shrinkchicks to get 40% off your first delivery and get your free veggies. That's hungryroot.com/shrinkchicks. Don't forget to use our link so they know we sent you. Can you believe we're on year 5 of Shrink Chicks? We have been podcasting since 2019 and have somehow yet to change the photo of us on the cover of the podcast. We are planning a photo shoot in a few weeks so we can finally update our cover art. We both obviously need new outfits for the photo shoot, but really didn't want to break the bank. So thank goodness for Quince, where we can get multiple high-quality outfits for a very reasonable price. Quince is here to transform the way you shop with a range of high-quality items priced within reach. For the shoot, we want to go with a
few different looks, one being monochrome, so I opted for a few key items from Quince's collection, including their Mongolian cashmere tee, classic trouser pant, and structured blazer. I couldn't resist adding their timeless 14 karat gold jewelry pieces to complete my look, because who doesn't love accessorizing? The best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to us. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes, making me feel even better about my purchases. Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/shrinkchicks for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/shrinkchicks to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/shrinkchicks.
If my daughter pushes me or kicks me, right? She's not trying to hurt me, but I still need to set a boundary. Even if she's doing it, like toddlers do that, like sometimes they like push or kick, like I have to say, like, I can't let you hit me like that. I can't let you hit other people like that. I cannot let you do this. So I can't let you speak to me that way. And I'll have to leave if you continue to. Now, typically, if in the past you have laughed it off or ignored it, they're not going to take your boundary seriously. And that's one of the things you have to remember about setting boundaries, is we think it's going to work after one try. That's, I don't know where that idea came from. That's not how any of this works.
I think it would just be easier, wouldn't it?
It sure as heck would. Yeah. It sure as heck would. You're going to have to know is that you're going to set it initially. You're going to say something and it's going to be, oh, what?
Yeah. Oh, what? You can't sensitive. Take it?
Yeah. Like, you're having sensitive. A rough day. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So there's going to
where
be...
Where are they from?
I'm not sure.
New York
So
accent.
There's going to be some type of dismissing, and there's going to be some type of maybe infantilization, right? Mm. And what you can say for that is, no, I'm actually having a really good day, and I've decided that I'm not going to let anyone speak poorly to me anymore. That's what I'm doing in my life. That's it.
And if you say, okay, if you keep talking to me like that, I'm going to leave, or we're not going to talk, or you have to follow.
I'm gonna hang up the phone.
You have to follow through with that.
Yes, you do.
Because that's another thing, is if you say that and then you don't follow through with it, there is no boundary.
There is. And that's what you have to remember, is if there is intermittent reinforcement, you only do it sometimes, it's not going to work out well. Because also people aren't going to take you seriously, and especially if you joke with them back or do it back towards them, it's not going to work. So you have to be like, you have to sort of get really clear. Before you set boundaries with other people, you have to get clear yourself about what boundaries are.
I think, too, it can be scary, right? Like to change the way in which you have been reacting in a relationship for your entire life can be really scary, right? Because even though maybe this parent's a bully and clearly your relationship is not what you want it to be, you still can anticipate the outcome because it's like a dance that you've done your entire life. So, one, to acknowledge that, like, it is scary to change these things in a dynamic. And that's why it's hard. Like, mm-hmm. It's hard to make these changes because you don't necessarily know how they're going to react to it. But what's important is that you want something to change. You want to set that boundary to take care of yourself. So, to follow through with that, it's almost a way of saying, I am going to put me first. I am going to take care of me first. And I'm going to set this boundary with you so that I can do that.
Mm. I like that.
Thanks.
I like that. That's just a nice way. Right. Well, it's funny because somebody else had asked a question that I think goes to is how to nicely set boundaries with people you love. I do believe we can nicely set boundaries, and I believe that we can harshly set boundaries. And I believe that one is actually more right than the other. I think that, like, we want to make everything sound nice and sweet because it's also a level of avoiding discomfort of conflict. So if we become overly attached to the idea about nice or good, it's usually about avoiding discomfort within ourselves. So I want you to, one, detach from that idea. Mm. A boundary is good because a boundary is for you. That's it. But what I'm assuming they're also asking is, how do I not upset other people? You can't do that. But
you can't control that.
As someone who has tried for most of the past decade to not upset other people.
Someone who has been a people pleaser their entire life.
Yes. Yes. It doesn't happen. But what you could say is, goes again, something we've talked about in the show before, is stroke, stroke, kick. I love you. I appreciate you showing up to help me with taking care of the dog today. And it's really hard when you make comments about the type of food I feed him.
That's very specific. Does that happen?
No. My parents feed my dog. I kid you not. Okay. So I have a huge, huge dog, for those of you who don't know.
Huge.
Huge.
Let's post a picture of him.
We will. My parents have a very little dog. My dad is obsessed with my, like, my dog is so great, right? Like, he was a rescue. He was, like, the best thing that ever happened. Like, you even say earlier, like Murphy's the best, right?
The best.
And
can we put that in context? Just that, okay, like, we were saying how, like, okay, it's kind of like with kids. It's like you care so much about your kids and you, like, show them off. But, like, everyone really just cares about, like, their own kid or their own dog.
Like, I think my dog's the best, but also Jen thinks her dog is the best, exactly, right? Like, I think my kid's the best, but I'm sure another parent thinks their kid's the best,
but
right?
But I was saying to Emily, I also think Murphy's the best.
You're like, I actually disagree with that.
I actually love Murphy. Okay, continue.
So, and that's because he doesn't give a lot of love back. So he makes you very attached to him because you have to really hard.
He brings up all my attachment
exactly.
issues.
Exactly. Where your dog is like, I give you all the love you need in 1 second.
Like a murderer could come up to me and my dog would be like, hey, so good to see you.
I know Murphy would not. He'll fucking protect my ass.
See, that's nice.
Mm-hmm. So, okay. But this goes back to, so like my dad is always like, I want joint custody of Murphy. Like when my parents take Murphy, no, they like, they feed him to the point where he throws up. Often when he stays there, because they'll give him anything he wants. So if he asks for more food, they'll keep giving him more food. Right. And he's also...
He runs the house.
He's also huge and was a shelter dog. So like they have like some weird stuff with food, like dogs that are rescued sometimes. So no, this was in no way an example of me. But I'm assuming it's an example that happens to people. Sure. That their like, parents come in and help and they're critical of things they do with their pets or kids. Yeah. So stroke, kick. I love you. Thank you for doing the laundry that we talked about. And we also did talk about you doing dishes. Do you think you'll be have time to get to that tonight?
You know what I think makes that hard sometimes is that sometimes we wait so long to, yes. And we don't set a boundary for so long that we develop a level of resentment.
Well, that's, and once we get towards that resentment, a wall starts to build.
And so.
And as the wall builds, it's hard to come down.
And so when we do that, we get to the point where a boundary ends up being like us freaking out, right?
Mm-hmm. Right? That's an attack. A boundary is not an attack.
Right.
When I say to you, are you fucking serious? You didn't get to the dishes again?
Right.
Are you serious? It's the one thing we talked about. That's resentment. That's not a boundary.
Right.
Right? These are two
we
very
need to
different
clarify
things.
What a boundary is.
Yes. So a boundary is the thing, it's what's talked about is where I can love you and me simultaneously, yes. Right?
And you can, and you're doing it in a healthy way. And I think oftentimes
healthy doesn't have to mean super nice.
Exactly. And also I think people think about a boundary as like cutting people off.
Yeah.
Right? Like it is
or hurting them or constricting
or
them. Yeah.
Right. But a boundary is actually something that's maintaining a relationship, right? That like a healthy relationship isn't about you giving and giving and giving to someone else. It's about a balance between the two of you. Mm-hmm. And the only way to maintain that balance is if you're able to speak up for your own needs as well.
Yeah. Absolutely. How to tell if your partner is emotionally unavailable or if you have unrealistic expectations?
Hard.
I guess I would say this. When we talk about the idea of emotionally unavailable, I don't entirely know what that means.
That's so. I think it also depends on what you feel like you're missing in the relationship, mm-hmm. Right? Like what a question I would ask this person. That's why Q&As are hard sometimes because I have so many other questions for the people who are writing in. The question I would ask this person is, what does that mean to you, right? Mm-hmm. Like, what are you not getting in your relationship that you're searching for? What does emotionally unavailable mean to you? What's your interpretation of that?
Mm-hmm. But what I hear it sounds is that you probably end up feeling very lonely in this relationship. Mm-hmm. That's what I would know. And I would say being lonely with another person there is the worst type of lonely, right? That feeling of... am I deserving? That emotional neglect feeling is such like a cold, isolating experience.
Yeah.
And so, no, I don't think you have unrealistic expectations, but I want to know, one, how you give it to yourself. What is missing from your partner? Yes, if you expect your partner to open the door every single night with a home-cooked meal and a foot rub and ask nothing about, like, has to be reciprocal, right? So I would also say, are you emotionally giving them what they need? Mm. Do I also feel like my partner's needs are being met? Are my needs being met? And am I telling them I love them, I appreciate them, hugging them, kissing them?
I also think a common misconception is that your partner is going to fulfill your needs at all times, right? Like that idea of like, this person completes me, you know? Not a thing.
I just had snot come out of my nose. When you said that, for some reason, that made me laugh to the point where snot came out of my nose. Why was that? I don't know,
because it's that funny. Because that people think that people...
That's not a thing. No, but you're complete, babe. You are complete. That's it. So, you're complete. But they're extra.
This romanticized idea of like, oh, my partner is going to take care of my... Anytime I am stressed out or anytime I'm going through something, my partner is going to be there to take care of me. Fact of the matter is your partner is also human. They might be stressed out too. And they also might need something at the same time. And that's mm-hmm. where we come into conflict. And so it's... You know, it's something to ask yourself is like, how often do you feel this, right? Is it happening all the time? Do you feel like your partner is sometimes able to meet your emotional needs? And I think a lot of the time, and this is where, you know, we just turn into like pretty cliche therapists, is like it comes down to communication. And we always say that having needs does not mean you're needy.
Yep.
And that being able to communicate those needs are really important, but also being realistic about what that might look like. Understanding that your partner is also human. They are not going to be able to meet your needs at all times. But it's important to communicate them. And the times in which your partner is maybe unable to be there for a certain reason, how do you meet those needs in other ways? Can you lean on friends? Can you lean on yourself? Can you lean on your dog?
Mm.
Can you lean on your cat? Can you lean on your fish?
I
feel like this is turning into like a rap.
Don't physically lean on your fish. You will kill it.
And you might drown.
How big is... What? Depending on how big. In your koi pond. Okay. How do you deal with a sister who is also a roommate who's in a toxic relationship? Now, we're going to probably have an unpopular opinion about this one.
Wait. Where are you?
I'm on the number 14.
Okay, thank you.
It's number 14, guys. Everyone listening and paying attention mm-hmm. is number 14.
Anyone else feel like a business class required in your schooling curriculum would have been massively helpful? Because same. We went to school to become therapists, and here we are 10 years later, really noticing the void in our knowledge on the business side of therapy, which is why we love our Masterclass membership. Masterclass has truly increased our confidence in running our therapy practice, The Therapy Group. Pros like Chris Voss, Robin Roberts, Daniel Pink, and Mark Cuban have filled that void and taught us so much about decision-making, negotiating, maximizing our time, and effective communication. This year, you too can learn from the best to become your best with Masterclass. Don't just talk about improving. Masterclass actually helps you do it. Plus, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, so there's no risk. And right now, our listeners will get an additional 15% off an annual membership at masterclass.com/shrinkchicks. Get 15% off right now at masterclass.com/shrinkchicks. masterclass.com/shrinkchicks. Anyone else go through soap and cleaning products insanely quick? At both my house and at our business, we're constantly replacing plastic bottles. Did you know that an estimated 5 billion plastic hand soap and cleaning bottles are thrown away each year? And if that's not bad enough, most cleaning formulas are 90% water, which is heavy to ship, leading to excessive carbon emissions. That's why we are thrilled to introduce our newest sponsor, Blue Land. Blue Land is on a mission to eliminate single-use plastic by reinventing cleaning essentials to be better for you and the planet with the same powerful clean you're used to. The idea is simple. They offer refillable cleaning products with a beautifully cohesive design that looks great on your counter. Fill your reusable bottles with water, drop in the tablets, and wait for them to dissolve. You will never have to grab bulky cleaning supplies on your grocery run. Refills start at just $2.25. You can even set up a subscription or buy in bulk for an additional savings. From cleaning sprays to hand soap, toilet bowl cleaner, and laundry tablets, all Blue Land products are made with clean ingredients you can feel good about. And I'll be honest, I was a bit skeptical at first. Can eco-friendly products really tackle tough messes? Well, Blue Land proved me wrong. The products I received, like their multi-service cleaner and bathroom cleaner, were powerful. Grime, grease, and dirt don't stand a chance. Blue Land is not only good for the planet, but also for your wallet. And the starter kit I received was beautifully packaged. package. The bottles are sleek and sturdy, and the scents are amazing. Lemongrass, a lavender eucalyptus, and fresh lemon, or you can choose fragrance-free. Blueland has a special offer for listeners. Right now, get 15% off your first order by going to blueland.com/shrinkchicks. You won't want to miss this. blueland.com/shrinkchicks for 15% off. That's blueland.com/shrinkchicks to get 15% off.
Okay, I've been having an unpopular opinion about this.
Okay.
Other people, we can't have people get out of a bad relationship. It doesn't matter how much we love them out of something. Same thing, you can't love someone out of addiction. This is not a thing that you can do, right? And so you can decide what works for me in this relationship, right? Can I not be around the two of you together? Can I not drink with the two of you together? Can I not, like, you know what I mean? Like, what are the boundaries I need to set up? But, like, you can't convince anyone to leave a relationship. And that's incredibly difficult when somebody you love is in a bad situation, whether that is in an abusive relationship, whether that's a toxic relationship, whether that is dealing with addiction or like some other type of like unhealthy behavior or dysfunction. It's really hard to see someone we love suffer, and it's very hard to be in that space. What it might mean is that you can't live with them. That sucks. What it might mean is that you can't go out with them on a Saturday night. That sucks. What it might mean is that when they're hanging out in your living room together, you have to go in your bedroom. That sucks. All of this sucks, and you can say to your sister, I love you and I'm worried about you. I love you and I want to make sure. But like, people have to make decisions for themselves for them to stick.
I think something that happens too sometimes is that, you know, we try to communicate this to our loved ones, right? Like, I see that you're in a bad relationship, or, and you recognize they're not taking your advice, or they're not. And so we start to get frustrated. We're like, come on, like, why don't you see this? There are so many red flags. And when we start to get frustrated, we start to get angry at this person, right? The tough thing about that is that it isolates them even more in this toxic relationship.
And that's so, not going to make them leave. That's like, exactly. That's not going to upset them.
I think about, okay, is there a way to set those boundaries, but also say to your friend, your sister, whoever, I'm here for you whenever you need me. Like, you understand my feelings about this. I care about you very much. These are the boundaries that I'm going to set up. But just so you know, I am always here for you throughout this, because I think sometimes in toxic relationships, they can also isolate the person. And the more isolated they are, the more they stick in the toxic relationship. So it's not your responsibility to get them out. You can let them know how you feel. But to be able to be there for them through that, I think is really important, and something that, you know, we forget, mm-hmm. and we just get frustrated, and then they feel even more pulled into the relationship because they're like, this is the only person who cares about me. But do they?
I always cry when arguing with my husband, and it's so hard to communicate my needs. Tips, write it out.
Also, cry in your free time.
Are you crying enough in other places? And this is coming from two people who love to cry. So as someone who cries often, I'm wondering, are you crying enough?
Let yourself. I think having another space, so like all the things, sometimes if you are one who holds things in, if you're not giving yourself the space to say all the things that you're feeling in the relationship, like separately, and that doesn't mean necessarily like going to a friend and talking shit on your partner, but maybe you're going to therapy, maybe you're, you know, just to like talk it out or write it out, to get it out beforehand, to let the emotions come out. Because sometimes when we hold those feelings in for so long and we don't have the space to get them out, and we start to talk about them, it just like, just an outpour. Mm-hmm. But also like, that's okay that you're crying.
Well, that's what I mean, right? I wonder if it's okay, but it's overwhelming for you that you feel like you can't like get the words out you want to say. And that's what I mean, that like, I think that like in the past few years, there's been like this obsession about like talking to people in person. And like sometimes we like can't and don't, right? Like if like the best way you're going to communicate is through writing or through texting, like I actually don't think that's problematic.
Same.
Right? Sure. Maybe it'd be better if it was in person. So there could be like maybe some more repair and like love and like hugging afterwards. But like also sometimes like you're just too activated in your emotions to be able to do that. And I think there's absolutely nothing wrong with writing it out or walking in with like something to that meeting. And also, I want you to think about if it's arguing versus having a discussion. If I'm arguing, what you're telling me is the emotions are already activated, so it's going to be really hard to pull yourself down. If my partner and I have a weekly team huddle where we talk things out, it's not only emotionally reactive. I wonder if you would be able to hold those emotions back in a different way and be able to communicate.
Also, if you can communicate about your communication, like to let your partner know, hey, listen, sometimes when I talk about this stuff, I get really emotional. And I just want to let you know, it's just a reflection of like release for me. And sometimes it takes me a little bit longer to get my point across. So when we talk, sometimes I'm going to be crying. And it's just because it's a release and I need to be able to get it out at times. And so I wonder, another question I would have for this person is, how is your partner responding to you crying? Like, is it make them uncomfortable? Does it seem like it's more intense than it actually, you know, like, is there a response to your crying? Because I think sometimes, you know, if people didn't grow up in an environment where crying was okay, where it was a sign of weakness, where it was a sign of something being really terribly wrong, I wonder what it brings up for your partner if there's an intense reaction to it. Is there anxiety that's being brought up for your partner? So almost communicating about the communication and what the tears might mean for you, because they might be different for you than they would be for your partner. Like if your partner was crying during the conversation.
Mm-hmm. We're gonna do a whole scenario now.
Perfect.
My mom drives me crazy. Okay, we'll say my mom struggles with me. My mom makes me, my feelings activated, and I feel so guilty. I live at home, obviously, growing up and through college. Since I left home after graduation and moved to New York City 10 years ago, our relationship has been on the rocks. We don't relate to the same things anymore, and I feel guilty. Everything she says annoys me, and it makes me not want to open up to her about certain things. Please help. You know what I'm going to say. You got some healing to do, my friend. Healing to do, my friend. We gotta talk about what's happening in your heart. We got some healing to do. Right. So, I'm not saying your mom's not the most difficult person.
Can that be the opener? It's so good.
No, I don't think that should be anything. We should probably edit that out.
We can make like a greatest hits.
Greatest hits. Right? String Tricks greatest hits. They will make your ears bleed. Okay. I'm not saying your mom's not the most difficult woman in the world. She might be. Your mom might be so difficult to work with and super triggering and all those things, but I want to know where the disconnect is. There's hurt there. If I have annoyance, I have hurt. So whether that's I've struggled in setting boundaries with her, I struggle in setting boundaries with someone else, there is a hurt, a rupture that happened in this relationship that you have not healed yet. I don't know what that is for you. But I think if you're not in individual therapy, you're going to need to be.
What's coming to my mind too, this person lived with their mom growing up and throughout college. And I'm just wondering how dependent mom felt on you for...
And if there's anyone else in the house.
If there's anyone else in the house. Like, is there level of dependence that mom felt for you and that, like, this is a transition of moving from maybe being in more of a codependent, I'm assuming, because that's the only thing we could do with these questions, is, like, more of a codependent kind of relationship where mom's depending on you for her emotional well-being, and that you're growing up and you're developing your own sense of self, and that that transition might be really challenging for mom.
Well, and you had said about that we don't relate to the same things anymore. And I think that's true. You are not the same people
you're
as you were.
Your own identity.
And so if you want to have a new relationship with mom, you have to create a new relationship with mom that's different than the one you had before. And you may need to grieve the one you had before, and so may she. But if you want to have a relationship with her, to say, like, I guess we need to figure out something else to do together. Maybe that means if she comes to visit or you guys go meet in the middle, you do activities and there's less talking, right? Like, if it feels like it's always gossipy or always, like, talking about, like, emotional stuff, like, maybe you want to go do, like, adventurous things and learn something new together, try something new. Like, when we go visit our parents, like, we can do something different, not what we've always done. I think it's really easy when we go back into our childhood homes to, like, completely regress back, that all of a sudden I'm, like, sitting on the couch and, like, fighting with my mom. Like, whatever, like, what's coming up?
I'm a therapist. How did this even happen?
Well, I'm like, wow, why do I feel like it's like
20 family dynamics?
Why am I like, why has it been like 20 years later? I'm still doing the same fucking shit, right?
It's amazing, like, you know, and I know that you have this experience too, but like, you could talk to your mom about something and someone else could say the same exact thing. Your mom says it, you're like, oh.
Stop it. stripper right now. So, because it brings up something for you. There's something unhealed there, right? So, I would say, one, you could definitely transition the relationship you have. But two, I want you to like look a little bit deeper about what is it? Where is my anger and frustration at her? And maybe it's not the thing she's saying now. Maybe it's stuff from the past that I haven't allowed myself to feel.
And you know what? You're developing, it sounds like you're at a point where you're developing your own identity. And we talked about this earlier, that when you change something in a relationship and you change something in the system, the whole system changes. And so I think it's very natural that because you're moving, it's a change in the dynamic. It's a change in the system. Mom is going to have a reaction to it. You're going to have a reaction to it. And so it's not necessarily a sign of something's wrong. It's a, it can be a sign of growth, and growth can be painful.
Mm-hmm. I'm a teacher, third year, and I'm miserable in my job. I know deep down I need to quit for my mental health, but I'm really struggling with feelings of guilt over leaving my students mid-year. Any advice? Oh. Nikki, what do you think?
The hardest part about leaving, but it's temporary.
Okay, Nikki says the hardest part about leaving, but it's temporary, the pain and discomfort. Listen, it's going to suck. You're probably a great teacher. And also,
so, you're definitely a great teacher. Yeah, you're saying that, like, I'm staying here for the kids.
Yeah, right. I also think one of the things we're seeing on, specifically the United States, we're seeing on a social level is what, you know, the Great Departure, which is all these people leaving their jobs. Nurses, teachers, people that have, there is like a very much like a blood brother. It's like a band, right? Like we stick with it. We're teachers. We're nurses. This is what we do. But the reality is y'all aren't being paid enough. You're being treated shitty. And nothing changes if nothing changes. So you have to save yourself first. And I know that sucks. And honestly, probably as a kid, there was teachers I loved. If they left, it would have impacted me too, right? Like this really sucks. There is no easy way to do this. But I want to ask you, what would it be like to leave? If you were to think about 2 weeks after the initial anxiety goes down a little bit, right? What your day would feel like, how you feel connected to your body, how you'd feel connected to the relationships in your life, right? Like, could there be joy that you experience?
You know, I also think to think about too, you know, it sounds like you're a very empathetic teacher. You care so much about your kids. You being burnt out and not being able to take care of yourself is going to take away from how much you can give to the kids anyway. So you have to be able to put yourself first. We always say on this podcast that in order to take care of anyone else, you have to take care of yourself first. And if that doesn't feel like it's possible right now, there are other teachers who maybe feel like they can do the work or feel like they're not as burnout who maybe can give to those kids. Just to remind yourself, you are not the only one who can help them. It doesn't mean they're going to be left to their own devices. And that it's just so important that you also take care of yourself first. But we understand how hard it is to make that transition, especially when you have spent so much time prepping for this, right? Like you prepare in your head, I'm going to be a teacher and this is what it's going to look like. And this is the journey. And you, it's almost an identity that you build for yourself. So also to be able to pull yourself out of that identity, there's a lot of grieving that can come with mm-hmm. that too.
Oh, speaking of identity, I have a good one. I don't think this one has to do with boundaries, but here we are. Now we've sort of moved on to jobs. Somebody wrote in, how to get past feeling of thinking I can't be in a relationship until I figure out what to do career-wise. Why would someone want to be with me if I don't know what I want for my future? So I want to ask you first, where did you get the idea that your identity is your career? Who told you that?
Are you talking to us? Is that in the video?
Is that to me? To you? I don't know. But, right, one, what does your career have to do with why a mate
picks you? Who taught you that? Was it your family?
Yeah, where did that idea come from that, like, you had to have it all figured out?
And someone's only going to love you if you figure it out.
Right? I'm only worthy of love and full acceptance if I knew everything.
Was it like your grades, right? Like growing up, is it if you got good grades, you got some sort of love, you got some mm-hmm. sort of appreciation, some sort of achievement? Like it was achievement really big in your family? So to ask yourself those questions, where does mm-hmm. that idea come from? What kind of, did you ever get like presents for getting good grades or anything?
No, I've had a severe learning disability my entire life. Right. I my grades were garbage my entire life.
Right, yeah.
I can't believe I got into college.
You're doing pretty well for yourself.
Yeah, I was not. My older brother was very smart. Same. I am not academically smart. Some would maybe say stupid for a school, right? Like, I was not getting any type of presents or rewards there.
God. And what's it like to have a smart older brother? We both had very intelligent very older brothers.
Yeah, it makes
brothers.
You feel like garbage.
He was like an enrichment, and like, you know, all the enrichment kids get taken
and
out.
Both our brothers are still killing it.
Crushing it.
We're just cursing on a podcast.
I feel like I'll call it. I'll be like, hey, this is Ronan. He's like, that's great. Good for you.
I disclosed, like, my brother's like, oh, I disclosed like a $300 million deal. I'm like, cool. I said fuck on a podcast today. Okay. But I would also say, like, maybe, like, when we talk about, like, what I want to do, right? Like, until I figured out career, I was like, what if you don't want a career? Like, what if you just want to be happy and in love? Like, I have to tell you, like,
that's okay.
That's okay too. Like, maybe, like, this idea of, like, loving what you do, like, it's super cool. Like, we love what we do. Like, we're very, very lucky that we're super passionate. But that's not everyone. For right. some people, a job is just a job. And that's it. And it's a paycheck. And, like, there's detachment okay. from it. And that's totally fine. And what they love is, like, hanging out, like, taking their dogs on hikes. And what they love is, like, spending time with their family. And what they love is going kayaking. And what they, right? Like, there's, like, other shit that you can love in this life. And not knowing exactly what you want in this life does not mean you're not worthy of full love and acceptance, because you truly, truly are.
I have to say, like, did you know what you wanted to do? When did you know what you wanted to do?
I always wanted to be a teacher.
Right.
And frankly, just so everyone knows, all of these Q&As are making it very easy that I didn't make that decision.
I majored in psychology, had no fucking idea what I wanted to do. My parents would be like, what do you want to do with your life? I was like, I don't know. They were like, what do you like?
I definitely just wanted to drink and party.
I just like sleeping. Should I be like a mattress tester?
You'd be such a good mattress tester. No, I just wanted to I just wanted to like drink and party. Like, I could promise you.
Right.
You that's like all I wanted to
be like an alcoholic for your future.
Thankfully, I did turn that around. Right. It's not. Now I don't barely drink alcohol at all, honestly. Right? Like, I'm actually like not a big yes. drinker at all, because like I actually just don't like alcohol.
Change careers.
Yeah, I just change careers. But no, like, dude, like for me, that was like an easy one. So
it's okay to not know. It's actually, I think, pretty common to not know.
And it just doesn't say anything at all about your worth. I'm wondering if maybe it's difficult because when you're dating, people say like, well, what do you do? And do you love what you do? Or what's your passion? Like, I wonder if maybe part of it is like what the experience of dating is like when you don't have that figured out, and how I can imagine that that could feel overwhelming and isolating to have those conversations over and over again. So what I would say is, if that's the experience, come up with a script. I sure as hell don't know what I do with my career, but you know what I really know is that I don't want to work a 9-to-5 the rest of my life, or I don't want to have a job that I take home with me, or I only want a 9-to-5 and I don't ever do anything else, right? Like, maybe you could say the things like, I don't know what I want, but here's what I know I don't want. And what I also want is life and balance, and that's okay too.
Beautiful. I also, you know, a question that came up in my mind is like, if this is something that's coming up during dating, what's your idea of what they might be thinking about you? Right? Like, of the, because it might highlight what insecurities you might have about it, right? We often project our own insecurities onto other people to say, oh, they must be thinking this about me if I tell them that I don't have a career.
Yeah.
So what's the worry about what they might be thinking? Because chances are they're probably not thinking that. No. And if they are, they might not be the right fit for you.
Okay. Let's fit in one more. We have a minute. We have just a few minutes. I feel stuck in a job with a company culture that does not have morals and standards I agree with, and the people there are very negative. It's mentally draining being around these people, and we're stuck in the office even during pandemic times. I know I need to get out for not only my sake, but for my fiance, who puts up with my anger and or crying self depending on the day. I've started applying to jobs. Yay! I started applying for jobs, but have so much anxiety around quitting, and I'm trying to figure out how and why I feel this way, and the best way to acknowledge my feelings, but also do what's best for me. Love you guys.
We love you.
Yeah, you got to go. Here's the deal. It feels so uncomfortable to quit because this has been such an unsafe environment, right? Like, it's like leaving an abusive relationship. The scariest part is the leaving. You don't focus on how good it's going to feel. So what I would say to you is, focus less on how uncomfortable that's going to be. This shit's going to suck. It's going to suck to quit. That's a guarantee. But I want you to focus, how am I going to feel 2 weeks after? Right? That same thing we talked about before. If I could see myself in 2 weeks after, when I'm in a place that feels right for me, when I have gotten past this, what's that going to feel like? Do I feel like my chest inflates and I can breathe? Do I feel like my neck pulls down and the anxiety goes off of everything? Can I feel my pelvic floor relax, right? Like truly, like, what can I feel in my body thinking about after this is done, what life could be like? And that's where I want you to focus it in and on.
The fact that you're feeling angry and crying often from your job is a sign.
Your body is done, and it's time for you to be done too. So.
And if it's affecting other areas of your life, mm-hmm. right? It's affecting, you know, the fact that you've already started applying for jobs, amazing. You're getting there. It's a process. And sometimes, you know, we stay in things because they're comfortable. They're something we know, even though they're torturing us. And so, it sounds like you're taking that step. It's just scary because yeah. it's the unknown and it's going to be different. But we love you. You're crushing it. Keep fighting the good fight. How's that? How many other sayings can I put at the end?
That was really good. And everybody was kung fu fighting.
What? I got corrected on one of my sayings. As I said, kill two birds with one stone. That's probably not appropriate.
Oh, somebody said PETA
Someone
came out with
something. And said PETA came up with feeding two birds with one scone.
Beautiful.
Beautiful.
Very good.
Okay. Hey, if you enjoyed this episode or you feel like somebody else might enjoy it too, please send them. We encourage you to give us a 5-star review, rate, review, subscribe, and follow us on Apple Podcast. Hey, we did a really fun merch giveaway on our Instagram. If you wrote
Thank
a review.
You everyone who
so,
wrote a
my
review.
God, 73 people wrote reviews. It was super, super awesome. We're going to start doing them more regularly if you're interested. But hey, thanks for listening to today's episode, because to grow yourself, you got to know yourself.
Hey guys, I'm Alana Dunn, and I'm the host of Seeing Other People. As an early Hinge employee, a modern dater, and now a fiance, I know the dating world maybe a little too intimately. I'm here to make you feel less alone in your dating journey, whatever it may look like. Don't have a date for tonight? No problem. Whether you're looking for love or just want to laugh and commiserate with others, tune in to Seeing Other People as we explore the roller coaster that is the ever-evolving world of dating.